ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also discuss why a plant-based diet isn't only the healthiest for us humans, it's also the best thing that one can do for the planet.
So if you're concerned about the planet, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Robin Lamont, author of the book The Chain. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news.
New Mexico, Kentucky, Iowa, South Dakota, and Wyoming are 2013's five best states to abuse animals, according to the latest report released by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, or ALDF. Following a detailed comparative analysis of the animal protection laws, ALDF has released a year-end report ranking all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and other U.S. territories, for the general comprehensiveness and relative strength of their respective animal protection laws. The report analyzes more than 4,000 pages of statutes, tracks 15 broad categories of provisions, and reveals the states where animal law has real teeth, and calls out those, like Kentucky, the single worst state in the nation for animal protection laws, for the seventh year in a row. Legislative weaknesses in the bottom-tiered states include inadequate standards of basic care for an animal, limited authority given to humane officers, and lack of mandatory reporting when veterinarians suspect animal cruelty. On the other end of the spectrum, this year's best five states for animals includes Illinois, Oregon, Michigan, Maine, and California. For the sixth year in a row, Illinois was the very best of the best for the strength of its laws protecting animals. The states with the biggest changes include North Dakota, which added, for the first time, felony penalties for cases involving extreme animal cruelty or torture. Arizona was the most improved state this year and was one of six states that strengthened its cost of care provisions. Other state improvements include adding felony penalties for animal neglect. Texas remained in the middle tier. ALDF released its first rankings report in 2006. Since then, more than half of all states and territories have made a significant improvement in their animal protection laws. You can see the full report at ALDF.org.
The reboot of the domestic horse slaughter business has been struggling to gain acceptance over opposition from animal rights advocates since 2011. It was dealt another blow last week after the latest congressional spending bill cleared the Senate and House of Representatives without providing funding for meat plant inspectors. The move effectively would ban meat packing plants in New Mexico, Iowa, and Missouri from slaughtering horses and exporting horse meat overseas. No plants have processed horse meat since 2007. And after Congress restored funding for inspections in 2011, the slaughterhouses faced stiff legal opposition and highly visible opposition from animal rights groups and activists, including actor Robert Redford and former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. Proponents of horse slaughter say that blocking domestic horse slaughter plants would shift production to plants in Canada and Mexico, where conditions are even worse. Wayne Pacelli, head of the Humane Society of the U.S., applauded the Senate and House efforts. He said, "We Americans care for horses. We ride horses and we even put them to work. But we don't eat horses in the United States and we shouldn't be gathering them up and slaughtering them for people in other countries." The Humane Society and other groups seek a permanent ban on the slaughter of domesticated horses and an end to exporting horses for slaughter outside the United States. Horse slaughter advocates aren't ready to rein in their fight. An attorney who represents New Mexico's Valley Meat and Rains Natural Meats of Gallatin, Missouri, said the companies may file legal action, saying a ban on plant inspections would violate the North American Free Trade Agreement. Valley Meat in New Mexico had planned to begin horse slaughter this month until State Attorney General Gary King filed suit on environmental grounds, saying the plant did not have a permit to discharge wastewater. So the fight will continue between those who respect the rights of horses and those who want to profit from their slaughter.
According to Wildlife News, Idaho's wolf management has opened a lot of eyes in the past month. With the recent coyote killing contest that resulted in the death of 21 coyotes, the hiring of a trapper by the Idaho Department of Fish and Game to eradicate wolf packs in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, and related lawsuits have been drawing increasing attention to Idaho's draconian approach to wildlife management. Press coverage has been international in scope, and many voices who usually remain quiet have been raised in response to these actions. Despite this, Idaho's Department of Fish and Game recently approved its elk management plan, which includes aerial killing of wolves and ongoing killing of wolves in wilderness to increase elk populations. Experts such as Dr. Maurice Hornacker, who conducted groundbreaking research on mountain lions, and Dr. Jim Henson, who conducted years of research on wolves and ungulates in the same wilderness area, have both spoken out in opposition to government wolf killing in the wilderness. On the other side of the argument, one of the newest members of the commission told the Idaho State Resources Committee that he'd be happy to see all the wolves disappear from Idaho and that he supports a very aggressive program to reduce wolf populations. It also doesn't faze Custer County Commissioner Wayne Butts, who testified before the commission that his county is looking to put a bounty on wolves. Hopefully, this increasing visibility over Idaho's wolf management will result in a stop of the senseless killing of these wolves that are important members of ecosystems.
Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Robin Lamont. Robin has been an actress, a private investigator, and was assistant district attorney in New York. She is also an author of suspense novels. Her book, The Chain, tells the story of an animal rights investigator's probe into a pig slaughterhouse. Stick around. Robin's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Robin Lamont. Thanks for being with us on the show, Robin.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Robin, can we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you became interested in animal rights?
Yes. My husband has been vegetarian for 40 years, and we primarily ate vegetarian for health reasons. But he attended a conference to end factory farming several years ago. And
Farm Sanctuary Conference?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
And he came away with just this incredible understanding of where our meat comes from. And he began to share that with me. And as he did, I started to read and do my own investigation. I read Gail Eisnett's book, Slaughterhouse. I guess over a period of a few months, I decided to go completely vegan.
It's hard when you're faced with the type of information that you get when you learn about what really goes on behind animal products in the U.S. and meat production and dairy as well.
It is. It's very difficult, and you know, I think many vegans and vegetarians face all the time, you know, even friends and family members who don't really want to know what's going on. And it's a tricky business to try to let people know about what is really going on and keep their friendship.
Well, they don't want to hear it.
No.
And it seems like it's obvious that most people would understand what's going on by now because of all the exposés that have happened in the last few years. I'm thinking primarily of the undercover video work by Mercy for Animals.
Oh, they do great work, yeah.
And it seems to me that the animal protection group in your book, The Chain, is it loosely based on Mercy?
Yes. I would say loosely. I tried to create a real fictional group, and for fiction I need to kind of expand my imagination a little bit. To let them get into some very mysterious and suspenseful situations. But yes, it's a group of investigators who are absolutely dedicated to looking into and exposing animal cruelty.
And doing undercover work in slaughterhouses. That seems to be one of the main things that Mercy for Animals engages in.
Yeah, they do terrific work. And I spoke to several of their investigators who had gone undercover in factory farms and meatpacking industry to talk to them and get the inside story on what's really going on and to confirm that, you know, this kind of abuse to the animals and the workers in a slaughterhouse is still going on today. This is not something that went back to the jungle by Upton Sinclair.
Yeah.
It's going on as we speak.
And yet, as you mentioned in the book, and as the industry constantly says when they're exposed, this is an isolated incident and not typical of the way we do business. But in fact, it is.
It is, and that's what I hear from all of the undercover investigators who go in. They generally go into random situations or where they've been called in by perhaps a whistleblower who doesn't want to become public.
Well, it seemed like you had an understanding of the process of a meat production going into this. Was there anything that really surprised you when you were talking to the investigators or anything that you really learned about that wasn't on your radar before?
I think primarily they were details about the workers, especially in the slaughterhouses down south, the huge influx of immigrants who are really looking to make some money, just trying to make a living wage. You know, in the chain, I tried to capture, I think, the sad reality that slaughterhouses are as difficult for the workers there as it is for the animals. Many of these people are trapped in that job, and they lose the ability to feel and to have an understanding of what they're doing to animals.
Well, tell us a little bit about the plot of the book.
Well, this is a suspense novel, so it follows the genre, and the heroine, Jude Brannick, who works for the Kinship, is summoned down to a town where the meatpacking business kind of is the main economy, and a whistleblower from the slaughterhouse has taken undercover footage that he wants to turn over to her that reveals the abuses. But when she gets down there, she finds that he is dead and the undercover video that he made is gone. So it's an unraveling of what happened to the whistleblower and why.
One of the best parts of the book that made me laugh the hardest, and I don't want to say that it's a humorous book, but as an animal rights person, I recognized and understood so much of what you were writing about. The scene where the meatpacking company makes a commercial of happy pigs frolicking in a field and munching on daisies. It seems so absurd to read that, but then I thought, you know, that's exactly what they do. They try to make it look like they're concerned about the happiness of their animals.
Absolutely. I mean, and I looked at a lot of the websites and some of the promo materials that the pork industry and the chicken industry and the beef industry that they put out, and they do. They try to portray the animals that they're raising for food as living very happy, comfortable, clean lives, and indeed that's not the case.
You were obviously inspired a lot by Gail Eisnitz and her book Slaughterhouse. Did you talk with her about the book as you were writing it?
Oh, definitely. She was an invaluable resource. And in fact, my husband and I went down to spend a weekend with her. It was just great. She's a pioneer in the animal advocacy movement. And her book, Slaughterhouse, revealed so much, even a decade ago about what was going on. But, you know, we were able to talk about it, and she showed me some undercover videos that she had supervised recently. Again, that shows that it's not just a decade-old problem. it's an ongoing problem.
And, you know, did you have any concerns when you're writing it about, you know, creating a fictional novel where it seems, you know, much of what happens is actually very, very real in life? Do you have any balance or any struggles balancing that between making, you know, making the story fictional?
Sure. I think there's always a balance. And I mean, certainly one of my concerns was that if I made the entire novel fictional, would people who read it believe that the underlying abuse was also fictional?
Right.
But that's not the sense that I'm getting from my readers. Certainly people in the animal advocacy world do understand that this is going on. And I think people who even do not understand, when they read it, they do get a sense that it is real, because I think underneath a lot of people do know that this is going on. They simply don't really want to acknowledge it in some way.
You mentioned earlier about illegal workers in the plants. You know, we've all known that that's been going on for a long time. I remember it was probably a decade ago or so that Tyson Foods got a slap on the wrist because they were busing people from Mexico up to the United States and providing them with phony paperwork to work in the slaughterhouses. And the conditions for the workers that are trapped in such a situation are very grim indeed.
Yeah, that's really true. You know, I think one thing that I really came to understand about the meat processing industry is that the largest factor that contributes to not only worker injuries, but to the cruelty to the animals is the speed at which the animals are killed and processed. This is an industry where profit margins are really slim and volume means everything. So the workers are pressured to kill the animals in much less time. And rather than regulating line speeds, it's only limited by federal sanitation laws. And I did speak to one undercover investigator who did tell me that he met several immigrants who did not have appropriate papers, and it was common knowledge that you could pay for a phony Social Security number that would hold you instead for a year or so.
Well, they, you know, they talk about how slaughterhouses are some of the most dangerous places to work in the entire country. And, you know, people try to say, oh, I don't care about, you know, animal issues or how animals are raised for food. You know, I care about people, and that's my main focus. But in actuality, if they did care about people, they would actually, you know, they would try to care about these issues involving the way animals are raised for food.
I think that's true. And I read accounts and spoke to a young man who had not worked in the pork industry, but you know, in a chicken slaughterhouse. And once he got out of there, he felt so bad about what he had been doing that he really had a very difficult time.
Yeah, and I think there's some studies now where that show that in towns where there are these slaughterhouses, often the rates of domestic violence and violence in the household are higher than other communities.
Yeah, and indeed that's true. It's true. Increased crime, child abuse, drug and alcohol abuse in slaughterhouse communities.
And Robin, you have a neat story. You've worn a lot of hats in your careers. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to this point?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it may sound somewhat scattered to some, but I began as an actress and did a few roles on Broadway. And
you were in the original cast of Godspell?
I certainly was.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I sang a song that sort of went viral called Day by Day. So that was a lot of fun. But then when the acting work began to get a little slow for me, a friend of mine got me involved in doing undercover investigations for a PI agency in New York City that specialized in anti-counterfeiting. So I was hired by this guy who believed that actors did the best undercover work. he used to call it street theater.
Uh-huh.
So I worked for him for a number of years, and that led to law school, where I thought that I would go into the trademark business, but ended up in the Westchester County DA's office as a prosecutor.
Well, it sounds like all that experience really suited you well for writing this book.
Well, I began writing. I left the DA's office some time ago and decided I wanted to be a writer, and so I began to write suspense novels because I thought, well, I love the genre and wanted to bring my background into that.
It says at the top of the book, the Kinship series. So is this going to be a continuing series?
It is, and that's what I think is, you know, I'm really excited about it. I think it's the first of its kind is a suspense series that actually features an animal rights investigator. You know, I thought there's no shortage of detectives and lawyers who seek justice for people, that it's really time for someone to seek justice for animals. So, yes, I am deep into the second book.
Oh, great. Can you give us a brief preview?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, sure. This book brings the heroine, Jude Brannick, out west, where she is pitted between ranchers, hunters, and wolf conservationists in the ongoing saga of what they call wolf or predator management. And she runs into a renegade federal agency that maybe some of us are familiar with.
Wildlife services?
Yes, that would be it. Yeah, who are really, they're employing just horrific methods to kill a huge number of wildlife on behalf, really, of the ranching industry. So she uncovers some of what's going on there. We'll see what happens.
That sounds like it's going to be a really great story. I've been following wildlife services for years, and I read recently that there's some sort of a federal investigation that's been called to investigate the Wildlife Services Agency. So hopefully something good will come from that, although, you know, it's hard to have hope.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in all of this, I mean, the Wildlife Services is a branch of the USDA, and while the Office of Inspector General, which is part of the USDA, has agreed to audit Wildlife Services and take a look at what they're doing, I can't help but believe it's a little bit like the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah, I think that's been a big major problem. And, of course, changing their name to Wildlife Services was the first step in kind of brushing aside what they actually do from the general public's eye. When it was called Animal Damage Control, it was a little bit more transparent of what they were actually doing, you know, so-called controlling animals, like you said, at the behest of the...
But they've tried to always operate in the shadows. They've changed their name every few years.
Well, it sounds like a great book. I really love suspense novels myself, and so I'm glad to see that we're having a good series. Maybe you'll get even an offer for a movie.
Yeah.
That would be terrific.
Because we really do need to get this information out to the public at large. You know what? People, they know, like Greg said, a lot of people know about the atrocities that go on in the name of eating meat, but we just have to keep showing people more and more evidence. I think in the advertising industry, they say that people have to hear a message at least like 13 times until it gets through to them. And I think our movement, you know, the people interested in a more compassionate lifestyle need to get their message out more and more through all different avenues. So it's really great that you're writing these books, Robin.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, I'm a big proponent of the power of story.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, nonfiction, but in it side by side to nonfiction, it can help get the word out
in a different way.
Absolutely, you know, it's interesting. Aristotle once claimed apparently that reading fiction, and what he meant was his contemporaries, Euripides and Sophocles, is a more serious business than history. He said that history tells us what has happened, and fiction tells us what might happen, and it stretches our imaginations, and there have been a lot of recent neurological studies that show that stories can actually help rewire the brain and gear it more toward empathy. So I'm hoping that I can make a contribution to that, and that people will enjoy the stories as well.
Can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about this book or perhaps purchase it?
Oh, sure. Well, they can learn more about the books, this whole series, and to see a little bit more about me on my website, which is animalsuspense.com. That's one word. And the book is, The Chain, is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
We've been talking with Robin Lamont, author of The Chain and other suspense novels. And we really appreciate you being on the show, Robin.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you all.
If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And while you're at the site, you can sign up for our February dinner, which features our own Greg Lawson. He'll be giving us his own take on the state of veganism in the 21st century. That's on February 22nd at Sunland Park Holiday Inn. And for more information, go to vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
Day by day, day by day.